The premier event for infection prevention and control is coming to San Antonio this June. APIC annual conference brings you the latest research, innovative products, and practical knowledge to help you prevent infection. From inspiring keynotes to thought-provoking panel discussions, APIC 24 curates an extraordinary platform for knowledge exchange. Meet IPs from around the world who face the same daily challenges as you. If you work in infection prevention and control, you don't want to miss this event. Learn more and register to join us in person or virtually at annual.apic.org.
You're listening to the 5-Second Rule, brought to you by APIC, the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology. Together with our nearly 16,000 members, we strive to create a safer world through the prevention of infection. Join us while we talk to infection preventionists and other experts to learn the truth about some common myths related to the risk of infection and to get tips to keep yourself and the people around you safe from infection.
Well, hey there, Sylvia.
Hey, Hannah, how's it going?
I'm doing all right. I'm feeling okay. I mean, there's a lot of talk around foodborne illnesses. Luckily, not haven't experienced that yet, but, especially I feel like whether it's, it could be any time of the year, but, whether it's the holidays, it's a lot of extra news stories about, oh, well, make sure that you cook your food to the right temperature and, just washing all of your greens beforehand. And it's just...
It's a lot. It's a lot. And I'm glad you're okay because we're in the same room together. So... Yeah, you do hear a lot about it. I actually have to confess that I probably err on the side of, gosh, that still looks okay in my fridge. But I know I'm taking a risk. It's like Russian roulette sometimes. But I know I also hear about foodborne stuff going on. I don't want to, if any cruise ships are out there listening, but you always hear about it on a cruise ship.
Yeah, and it could be as simple as, there's one staff member that was handling food at one point and it contaminated everything because they didn't properly wash their hands. Or other times it could be a mass outbreak of, E. coli that comes from the distribution area of where, and that is then distributed across the country. And so we were talking with public health professionals and it was, talking about what their role is and the fact that they have each kind of piece really has their own almost unique fingerprint. They're able to track back to where it started. So when you think of, big groups like Chipotle or other businesses that have been impacted by foodborne illnesses, at least they're able to track whether it was an employee, whether it was the distribution, whether it was the crops themselves. I mean, it's messy business.
Or the farms. I know we had a great episode with some of our local healthcare, public health folks who are keeping us safe on foodborne illness. But we've got someone to talk to us about it because you and I obviously are not the experts, but we do have an expert, right, Hannah?
We do. Yeah, we are going to be talking with Karen Bally. She's the director of infection prevention at Ascension via Christy, and she's joining us from Wichita, Kansas via Skype. So we're going to be talking to her about really a breakthrough that she had as a member of the infection prevention community. And then we're going to go into our what's bugging you section and just ask her what's bugging her about foodborne illnesses and what the public should really know.
Yeah, I love our what's bugging you section because it gives our guests an opportunity to hone in on one or two things that are really driving them crazy or they want the public to know. So I'm psyched to hear what she has to say.
Let's bring in Karen. Hey, Karen.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well. How are you doing? Thanks so much for joining us to talk about foodborne illnesses and your professional experience in that area.
So,
thank you for having me on the podcast.
Karen, we were starting to tell our listeners about, we always hear about these foodborne outbreaks and illnesses, periodically. I know I've heard about them related to, schools or a couple of restaurant chains, cruise ships. Can you talk to us about some of your work and what you were uncovering? I know that you were part of an investigation.
Sure. So like you said, you know, you hear about it a lot in the public, but you don't really hear a lot about having a foodborne illness outbreak necessarily in a hospital setting, which is where I work. And so it was a little different and a little just unique for us. But I think it's like any other investigation that an infection preventionist does. I mean, you basically start with the beginning and you just start looking at what's going on and what changes have been made to try to figure out what's going on in your hospital.
So walk us through this, because it's sounding like you're a detective. I've shared on the show before that I'm kind of a Law and Order geek. So I'm thinking you're like one of the detectives on Law and Order. How did this all come about? You're at the hospital, you come to work one day. What happened?
So, yeah, we do feel, infection preventionists do feel like detectives, that's for sure. So we see a variety of patients at our hospital. We're a big level one trauma center. So we have a lot of patients that we see. And, you know, it's not unusual to see all kinds of bugs and organisms, you know, come across every day on our work list. But we saw a patient that had been in our facility for a little while and all of a sudden came across with an organism called Listeria, which is really unusual to see in the environment, and especially very unusual to see in a hospital.
So what is Listeria? Where would you normally see it, just to clarify?
So Listeria is one of those organisms that likes to grow in what we call cold food. So you see it sometimes in like cold meats or cold cheeses, fresh fruits or vegetables, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And so once someone kind of comes in and, you know, you've run that test and it's come back positive for Listeria, you know, kind of going back to our conversations with the public health team, do you then report that to them and it's sort of handed over to them and they kind of take the lead? Or, you know, what does that look like once the test comes back positive? What are the next steps there?
Well, what's really interesting about Listeria is that it has an incubation time of anywhere from 3 to 72 days. So once we identify the organism, yes, we definitely got our public health partners involved in the situation. We had to report it both to the local and to the state health department, and started really just investigating just things that the patient, you know, had eaten, or looking at dietary records if the patient had eaten here at the hospital. We were pretty limited to what we could see, just because, you know, sometimes our patients don't feel very well and they were bringing, you know, family members might bring something in from the outside, you know, bring in, you know, hamburger or something that might make the patient, you know, the patient might feel like eating, so they'll bring those type of products in from the outside world. So sometimes it's hard for us to track exactly what the patient is eating.
And then with something like this, I mean, you know, we won't mention the name of the company, but typically when I think of kind of if I have food poisoning or something, to me, it's sort of a one-off. Like I went to a restaurant one night and, you know, the food just didn't sit well with me. And so then a couple of days of misery and then I'm back and ready to go again. But this, you know, came from a pretty well-known large ice cream company. And so, you know, I think if I remember the story correctly, it led to a recall? And, you know, so how did it kind of balloon into that beyond just, you know, kind of those single cases that some people, even like myself, we might just kind of ignore and say, oh, just about a food poisoning, I'll be fine.
Well, it actually took us a little over a year to figure out what the connection was and, you know, put the dots, connect the dots and figure out what we were truly dealing with. So we had a total of 5 patients that tested positive for Listeria. They were they were spread apart. So we had patients that were coming in, and then it was several months later, we'd have another patient come in and test positive. We actually had patients that tested positive at the same time during their stay in the hospital. And each time, you know, we would send those cultures, those isolates off to our state health department, and they were doing what they call pulse-filled gel testing. So they're looking at the DNA, they're looking at to see if there's some kind of commonality among the strands. And it wasn't really until patient five had come in, which was almost a year later from patient one, and patient five and patient three, which were about 4 months apart, actually tested positive. And their pulse-filled gel was an identical match.
And this kind of goes back to that piece of, you know, each strain almost has a unique fingerprint, their own set of DNA to kind of link these back together, which is where that detective piece really comes in.
Right. It's like your own ancestry genealogy tree in the bug world, right?
Right. And that's what was so frustrating, because with each patient, you know, we were trying to figure out what is the source, where is this coming from? But each time we would send that off to the state, you know, they would call and say, oh, there's no match. There's no way these two could be connected. So it got really frustrating during the investigation, but we continued to forge ahead.
So that's interesting, because the big factor here, it sounds like normally hospital patients would not be presenting with Listeria, even though they were so far apart. Because I know we've talked about with some of our guests the notion of surveillance, this idea that you're watching and tracking, and this is all suspicious. So you have a bunch of cases, you're working with your public health laboratories, you're tracking the DNA, you're working with your team. Mm-hmm. What was the outcome? What happened?
So, and it's really about detective work and I think collaboration. So you've got to know the folks in your hospital. So I knew what I was looking for. I knew I was looking for a product that was cold, that sustained in a very, you know, sustained in a cold environment. So even after the first patient came in, you know, my first contact was to get a hold of our nutrition director and ask her and say, you know, has there been any recall? Has there been anything that has come in that's different than what we normally see or normally receive in the hospital? So after talking to our nutrition director, she had informed me that they had a product change, and there was a change in the ice cream product that we normally serve our patients. We serve our patients milkshakes out of the kitchen, and they use scoop, these prepackaged scoops that they dump into the milkshake machine, and then they make chocolate and vanilla and strawberry milkshakes.
Well, wait, can patients. I stop you there for a minute there, Karen? Your hospital serves milkshakes?
Yes.
Oh, patients. My God. Wait, that's a great hospital.
I mean, that's a morale booster right there.
I mean, yes. I had to stop because that's kind of cool. Milkshakes at the hospital.
Maybe not this particular time, and cool, no pun intended, I assume, but maybe not this particular time around, because it led to a... just some not so great feeling afterwards, but it started within your facility. So it was a contaminated product that was shipped to the hospital.
Well, we didn't know it at the time. We thought, when my director of nutrition came to me and she said there has been a recall on, or I'm sorry, she had said that there was they had come in and they had taken the product out of our kitchen but didn't really give us any reason why they had done that or what was going on. She said sometimes in her world, you know, like a product could be taken back because maybe the, the ingredients weren't right, or maybe the mixture wasn't right, or maybe the label wasn't correct. So she said, you know, it's not uncommon for food vendors and various vendors to come and, you know, to pull a product because of, you know, something's wrong with it.
And so, you know, I think in this particular case, what ended up, how did the Listeria get in there? Was it just an ingredient that came from another party? Was it at the packaging level? Because I think that's one thing that I think is, you know, I hate to say it, but fascinating about foodborne illnesses is that the cause really could be anywhere. It can come from a single person. It can come from packaging or manufacturing or distribution. It could come right from the farm itself. I mean, where did this really kind of source from?
What we learned after our investigation was that the original source actually came from the farm that they received the milk to make the ice cream. And then there was contamination throughout even the manufacturer's plant. So I think in this instance, it was just one of those, you know, it started and then maybe with poor cleaning habits or incorrect cleaning habits that, you know, that it never really, the organism never really was killed. And so then the ice cream became contaminated and then shipped out, you know, all over. I understand it went to hospitals, it went to prisons, it went to school systems, you know, it's on your grocery store shelf. So
what was the outcome? Folks got better after they fell sick?
No. Mm-hmm. We unfortunately, some of our patients were very, very sick. They also had underlying conditions, but we had some that did, you know, pass away.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Oh, my goodness.
That is unfortunate. So you were instrumental in this investigation. So it speaks to certainly the infection preventionists doing their vigilance and surveillance. And it didn't have a great outcome, but you were able to identify this outbreak.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that was really having that good communication and having that collaboration with, you know, the dietary department, because, you know, if it hadn't been for us almost talking every day or talking in the hallway every day, for her to come to me right away and say, hey, we had a product that was pulled from our kitchen. And you know, us as detectives were like, oh, well, that product's cold and I'm looking for a cold organism that grows and stays alive in a cold environment, and be able to put those pieces together and then actually make a phone call to the company and say, hey, what's going on? I understand you're having some issues. Can you tell me a little bit about it? And having that conversation with the company and then, you know, just trying to put all those pieces of the puzzle together.
And I think one of the things that we want to address in this that I think is a common theme across our episodes is, you know, not all heroes wear capes. So you have, I think, you know, there are individuals out there that don't quite know the position of an infection preventionist. You know, it's just, oh, well, there's a healthcare facility. I'm in there. I'm getting taken care of. And, you know, there's a whole group of people behind the scenes that are monitoring things like that. And I think, you know, it's so important that we recognize individuals like you who are really going above and beyond to, you know, make sure that people are being taken care of in the facility the best that they can. And I think it's just, you know, I think a lot of people just assume, oh, you know, I'll, you know, food poisoning, just a couple of days and I'll be fine. But, you know, just like with so many other things, depending on, you know, what, if you currently have a compromised immune system, just depending on the condition of your body, you know, anything can really just cause devastating effects, even something like,
yeah, just, you know, getting some dodgy ice cream, which for most of us might mean, as you said, just a few days of discomfort can end in tragedy. So, yeah, we appreciate your service along with the service and work of all the infection preventionists out there. You know, Karen, at the beginning, we told you every episode, we love to ask our guests, what's bugging them? What is it that you want to share that you'd like folks to know about foodborne illness?
Well, I think one thing that I have learned through this investigation and I hope to share with others is that I really think the public out there should really pay attention to when the FDA or the CDC or whatever, you know, federal agency is recalling food, whether it's, you know, recently lettuce or whether it's meat or, you know, whatever it is. I think that consumers should take it and really pay attention to that and take it seriously.
Yeah. Well, you've heard it here, folks. Take those recall notices seriously. Check out the CDC.gov website.
And the FDA. They have a whole list of recalls as well.
And the FDA. And again, we want to thank Karen Bally for joining us today and sharing her story. For additional information on infection prevention, check out www.apic.org. And Hannah, thanks.
Thanks always to you, Sylvia.
Thanks for listening to The 5 Second Rule, produced by the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology staff, including Sylvia Covedo and the APIC Communications Committee, in partnership with Human Factor. Audio tech is Blake Alphen.